In his sermon on Sunday, July 8, Tom Ott made the statement that the Dark Ages were totally dark. That statement is mostly true, but not entirely. One of the flashes of light in the medieval Dark Ages was Hildegard von Bingen. Now, Hildegard was born in 1098 in Birmersheim near Mainz, Germany, the youngest of 10 children. Her parents, Mechthild and Hildeberts, were ranked in the lower free nobility. She was their 10th child and was dedicated to the church as a tithe, influenced perhaps by her poor health and strange visions. Also influenced by the fact, I think, that there were 10 kids, they were in the lower nobility, and times were tough. So what better way to make times easier than to pawn this poor little girl off on the church? Around 8 years of age, she was entrusted to the care of a holy woman named Jutta, daughter of the Count of Sponheim, who had connections to Hildegard's father. Together, Jutta and Hildegard entered the Benedictine monastery of Diezibodenburg in November 1st, 1112, which was All Saints' Day. Now, not only did they enter the monastery, they were placed in essentially solitary confinement. There were just the two of them in a room by themselves. There was a little trap door that meals were pushed in, but by and large, for several years, those two lived alone in that room. Eventually, Jutta became superior to a small community of women that developed at the monastery, and Hildegard remained under Jutta's tutelage for 30 years. When Jutta died in 1136, Hildegard became magistra, or teacher and leader, at the age of 38. Hildegard and her sisters left Diezibodenburg to found a monastery called Rupertsburg in 1150. And 15 years later, Hildegard founded another monastery in Eibingen. Hildegard received three visions that urged her to write. One in 1141, when she saw a vision of tongues of flame, signifying to her that she should write down and share her spiritual experiences. The second vision that urged her to write occurred in 1163, and the third in 1167. To speak and write what she heard and saw were the instructions that accompanied the first vision. The result was her first book, Scivias, which is in Latin, Know the Ways, which took her 10 years to write and which includes many paintings, such as the one that you see here, and ends with an opera, the first opera that was composed in Western civilization. In fact, well, in 1147, her first writings, which were not finished yet, describing her visions, came to the attention of the Benedictine reformer and preacher Bernard of Clairvaux and his friend Pope Eugenius III, both of whom affirmed her gift as prophet and mystic. Now, just as an aside, Bernard of Clairvaux was one of the principal people who founded the Crusades that occurred in the Middle Ages, but he is probably best known for the fact that a dog breed was named after him. Pope Eugenius III's affirmation established Hildegard's reputation as an important voice in medieval Catholicism. Her second major work, Liber Vitae Meritorum, or Book of the Rewards of Life, focuses on morality and psychology, vices and virtues, and how to overcome the vices. This book took her 5 years to write. Her third visionary book, Liber Divinorum Operum, or Book of Divine Works, was undertaken over a 7-year period and was completed in 1174. In it, she presents 10 visions devoted to creation and salvation, including an, I'm going to have a hard time with this word, exegesis of John the First and the book of Revelation. Among other, Hildegard's other expositions were books on medicine, such as Causae et Curae, Causes and Cures, and Physica, which draws on elements of nature, herbs, stones, trees, fish, and more, for cures to ailments. The lives of Saint Disibode and Rupert, the two saints of which the two monasteries were named after, commentaries on the rule of Saint Benedict and the Athanasian Creed, and a commentary on the Gospels, which were entitled Expositiones Evangeliorum. My Latin is not so good. In addition to this, she wrote over 400 letters, mostly to bishops, archbishops, priests, and popes. She also wrote a small book in which she invented her own language. Now, her writings later served as the theological basis for the works of St. Thomas Aquinas and Meister Eckhart. Emperor Frederick Barbarossa enlisted her advice prior to taking the Holy Roman Empire crown, and Hildegard maintained a correspondence with him, especially chastising him for appointing popes in conflict with the church's papal appointments. This is the first known advocacy of the concept of separation of church and state. She was the conscience of the church and a frequent scourge to bishops, archbishops, and even popes about ecclesiastical corruption and simony. And in spite of her scourges, apparently it still goes on today. In her 60s, she began a tour of the Rhineland Palatinate and parts of Swabia, preaching sermons at many churches. This was an unheard-of practice for a woman, let alone someone who was not an ordained priest. At the age of 80, Hildegard was interdicted by the archbishop for a full year, which was akin to excommunication for her and all her sisters, an interdiction that was lifted only 6 months before she died. The point of contention was that the archbishop wanted her to remove the body of a revolutionary young man who was buried on her property, and she refused. Ultimately, she won the argument after presenting her case to the Pope, and the body is still there today. Her earliest biographer proclaimed her a saint, and miracles were reported during her life and at her tomb. However, she was not formally canonized until 2012, when Pope Benedict XVI declared her to be a saint through the process of equivalent canonization, based on a standing tradition of popular veneration. Later that year, Benedict proclaimed Hildegard a doctor of the church, one of only four women to have been so named. Hildegard was a mystic, prolific writer, artist-illustrator, musician and composer, herbalist, pharmacist, and medieval physician. In short, she was the Renaissance woman 200 years before there was a Renaissance, let alone a Renaissance man. Her illumination showed on the screen was painted 250 years before the birth of Leonardo da Vinci, let alone his painting of Vitruvian Man. So you're thinking, you know, he's on another one of his obtuse fantasies about somebody that, why should we care? Why should we as contemporary UUs care at all about a 12th century abbess? Well, we shall see that she relied on our first UU source to present her ideas that are reflected in our concept of the overriding theme of love and in our UU principles. So I would like to explore some of her writings and see this reflection. In this exploration, I will rely mostly on Hildegard's writing with little editorial comment of my own. I mean, there is no way I can improve upon what she said. I heard a voice speaking to me. The young woman who you see is love. She has her tent in eternity. It was love which was the source of this creation in the beginning when God said, "Let it be." And it was. As though in the blinking of an eye, the whole creation was formed through love. The young woman is radiant in such a clear, lightning-like brilliance of countenance that you can't fully look at her. She holds the sun and moon in her right hand and embraces them tenderly. The whole of creation calls the maiden Lady, for it was from her that all of creation proceeded, since love was the first. She made everything. Love was in eternity and brought forth in the beginning of all holiness, all creatures without any admixture of evil. Adam and Eve as well were produced by love from the pure nature of the earth. The first figure said, "I am love, the light of the living God, and wisdom has performed her works with me, and humility, which is rooted in the living fountain, is my helper, and peace cleaves to her. And through the light which I am, the living light of the blessed angels shines, since as a ray shines from light, so this clarity shines from the blessed angels. And how could it do otherwise, since there is no light without radiance? For I have drawn humanity, which is rooted in me as by reflection, inasmuch as the image of a thing is seen in water. Whence I am the living fountain, since all things that were done were foreshadowed in me, and according to this reflection, mankind was made with fire and water, inasmuch as I am fire and living water." Hildegard writes poetically, "I am the one whose praise echoes on high. I adorn all earth. I am the breeze that nurtures all things green. I encourage blossoms to flourish with ripening fruits. I am led by the Spirit to feed the purest streams. I am the rain coming from the dew that causes the grasses to laugh with the joy of life. I call forth tears, the aroma of holy work. I am the yearning for good." God has gifted creation with everything that is necessary. Limitless love from the depths of the stars, flooding all. It is the royal kiss of peace. I compare the great love of Creator and creation to the same love and fidelity with which God binds woman and man together. This is so that together they might be creatively fruitful. In Hildegard's visions, she sees God as a God of love who has imbued all people with worth and dignity in his own image. Is this not our first principle? Now, Hildegard took on emperors and abbots, poets and politicians who preferred pride of power to Lady Justice. She understood education to be about cultivating wisdom, and this by way of cultivating creativity, and never saw it as developing knowledge for power's sake. Like Bonhoeffer and Thurman, she prefers life to religion if it comes down to a choice. Hers is a God of life far more than a God of religion. Sound familiar? It is clear that Hildegard saw life, living, and deeds as far more important than religious dogma. No, she saw life, living, and deeds as the only purpose of humanity. Rabbi Abraham Heschel writes, "It is customary to blame secular science and anti-religious philosophy for the eclipse of religion in modern society. It would be more honest to blame religion for its own defeats. Religion declined not because it was refuted, but because it became irrelevant, dull, oppressive, insipid. When faith is completely replaced by creed, worship by discipline, love by habit, when the crisis of today is ignored because of the splendor of the past, when faith becomes an heirloom rather than a living fountain, when religion speaks only in the name of authority rather than with the voice of compassion, its message becomes meaningless. This is exactly what Hildegard means, and it is exactly consistent with our UU beliefs in deeds, not creeds. Back to Hildegard. I look again, and behold, all the elements and all the creatures were shaking with horrible motion. The fire, the air, and the water broke open and moved the land. Flashes of lightning and claps of thunder clashed. Mountains and forests fell. As a result, all mortal things breathed forth their life. And I heard a voice speak with a voice so loud that it could be heard throughout the whole circle of the lands. It said, "O, you people who lie on the ground, rise up!" Now, in the people who were meant to be green, she's using the word green now as a verb, and says it's our task to green things. There is no more life of any kind. There is only shriveled barrenness. The winds are burdened by the utterly awful stink of evil, selfish goings-on. Thunderstorms menace. The air belches out the filthy uncleanliness of the peoples. There pours forth an unnatural, loathsome darkness that withers the green, wizens the fruit that was to serve as food for the people. Sometimes this layer of air is full of fog, which is the source of any destructive and barren creatures that destroy and damage the earth, rendering it incapable of sustaining humanity. God desires that all the work be pure in his sight. The earth should not be injured. The earth should not be destroyed. What do you think of that, Mr. President? Another vision. The greening power of the virtues faded away, and all justice entered upon a period of decline. As a result, the greening power of life on earth was reduced in every seed because the upper region of the air was altered in a way contrary to its first destiny. Summer now became subject to a contradictory chill, while winter often experienced paradoxical warmth. There occurred on earth times of drought and of dampness. As often as the elements of the world are violated by ill treatment, so God will cleanse them through sufferings, through the hardships of humankind. This vision of the web of life that Hildegard gave her time challenges our own sense of planetary citizenship. And her apocalyptic vision surely predicts what humankind is doing to our planetary biosphere today, with pollutions of the oceans, burning of fossil fuels contributing to climate change, and the escalating extinction of life forms. Stockholm, Sweden's average July temperature is 74 degrees Fahrenheit, but on July 17, it registered 91 degrees. Sodankaja, Finland, which is 59 miles north of the Arctic Circle, 59 miles north of the Arctic Circle, registered 90 degrees also on July 17. Ireland and Wales are experiencing record high temperatures. There are scorching record temperatures in western U.S. Unprecedented wildfires rage in Greece, western U.S., and even Sweden. Successive 500-year rainfalls with associated flooding plague the eastern U.S. Think of Ellicott City, Maryland, Hummelstown, Pennsylvania, and Hershey Park. Hildegard cries out for preserving the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Our denier-in-chief should be listening to Hildegard. She says, there is no true science which does not emanate from the mysterious. Every thinking person must be filled with wonder and awe just by looking up to the stars. And this is similar to what Albert Einstein said. I have marveled often in my life. As a boy of 12, I already marveled at Euclid's geometry. Of course, what I thought was superhuman or miraculous was soon nothing but logical thinking added to experience. Still, I marvel every day, and it is my faith in the order of creation which makes me marvel. Hildegard was filled with wonder and awe of the mystery we call life. She was inspired by her visions to proclaim through her writings, her music, and her paintings the priority of love, the inherent worth and dignity of the human race, the need for an ethical life of good deeds, and the ultimate urgent necessity to preserve our earth. She was a prophet of 21st century Unitarian Universalist. Let it be so.